Hey, you guys. It's the movie retrospective.
Man, I'm not in the fucking thing. I'm in the video. I was in the other video.
You're in the other video.
Yeah.
The video next door.
Yeah, next to this one. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So, hi, everybody.
In Tom Land. That's how it works. That's how the internet works when I'm involved.
Yeah, that's
I move
right.
over that way, sense. I show up in the other video on YouTube. We're next to it. Yeah.
How funny would that be if that actually happened?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
But yeah, so hi, everybody. If you're new here, this is our little movie retrospective show. And a couple weeks back, I think, when we were talking about, I don't even remember what movie it was, but some people seem to really respond to us doing more kind of like 50s sci-fi type movies. And so I put that in the poll. I put this movie in the poll, and it handily won. And I'm glad, because I'd been wanting to do this for a really long time, because I had not seen this movie since I was a kid, and I really, really wanted to revisit it. This is the 1954 sci-fi classic, Them.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I mentioned this on the other program. That's what made Jenny go up there and get a vote on it. This is my dad's favorite movie when he was a kid. All right. When he was a kid, it said that this movie scared the shit out of him. And then later on, when he saw Alien and Aliens, he said, man, you know what I mean? He's like, this is like Them, mm-hmm. the movie Them. So when I watched it last night, because I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, watched it last night, and Alien and Them is an homage to this movie. A lot of scenes, a lot of concepts are directly out of it, this movie. Yeah. And it's obvious when you watch it.
Yeah, this was a very influential sci-fi film. Yeah, it definitely influenced Aliens for sure. Yeah. There's some scenes in here that are direct homages. I think it also, particularly the one character, like the older doctor, I think he kind of influenced the character, the older doctor guy in the scientist in Jurassic Park. This sort of like doddering genius type
There's
of character.
There's another version of Newt in this.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
The scene where Dallas in Aliens is going through the round tubes with a flashlight and a flamethrower trying to hunt down trying to look for the alien is directly from this movie. The hero in this movie is doing that same thing and you're going, "Oh, Alien."
That's the whole idea
going to the egg chamber to find the fucking queen and the drones and the fucking eggs and the shit hatching and the outbreak spreading around and it's going to wipe out the earth. That's all stuff later homaged in Aliens. You know, when you see it, you go, okay. And the thing is that usually in a 1950s movie, the special effects suck. And it's mostly old white dudes, 7 or 8 of them, sitting around in offices talking to each other on the phone. That's most of the damn movie.
Yeah.
Not this one. Okay. This one does have some of that. Every 50s movie takes place at an office.
Yeah. Right?
But they do leave the office and then they go on little missions and they fight the bugs and they go places and hear people's story about seeing the bugs flying. And it's good. It's real good. For 1950s, it's high budget and action packed. The weapons and the troops are authentic. I think on some shots, I believe it was U.S. Army or National Guard type.
Yeah, well, particularly the last iconic scene with the flamethrowers, those were absolutely like real flamethrowers. Well, they were real flamethrowers, and the dudes that were army guys doing it. Yeah,
yeah, and there actually are burning up the giant ants. All right, now. I remembered that when they were shooting up, from a kid, I remembered when they were shooting up the damn ants out in the desert with a Tommy gun. I remember seeing bullet holes appeared in it. And looking back on it, I thought it was live rounds. I says, man, that had to have been live rounds when they were shooting that thing. Saw it again last night. No, it's not. It's not. But it looks really good. So it is blanks that they're shooting, except for the flamethrowers. And they also bring out some of the newer late World War II bazookas as a rocket launcher. And they were shooting white phosphorus rounds. And that's real white phosphorus. That's the real thing. So they're not cheapening out with this movie. This is good shit. Good shit. And it's effective. It's got a lot of tension and it's like, whoa, what's going to happen? You know, it's still a great movie. It holds up. And it's 50s style. But, you know, it's 50s style.
I mean, if you're into, like, creature features, I feel like this is one of the ones that you kind of have to see. So, because this wasn't the first, you know, 50s sci-fi. This was the first big bug movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first, like, irradiated giant monster one. That would have been, I'm pretty sure that was Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, which came out the year before this one. But that was like a big, like, Godzilla-esque kind of monster, whereas this was the first of the big bug movies. And I feel like, also, this is one that was from a major studio.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers, where a lot of the other ones were kind of like more independently produced and were a lot cheaper. Now this one, they cheaped out on this one too, which I'll get into in a little bit, but this was a major studio that released it. It was a big hit. It was actually one of their highest earners, Warner Brothers, for 1954, either their highest earners or among their highest earners that year. So this was like a massive hit. I think what makes this one stand out from other 50s, because it does have some of the same things that you expect from a 50s sci-fi. A lot of talk, like military scientists all talking around, like thinking about how we're going to solve the giant monster
problem. Explaining shit to you, the audience.
There's
actually a mini documentary explaining to you about how ants work.
Yeah. I kind of liked that, actually. I didn't mind it.
It's 1950s.
Yeah.
Everything is very 50s style. They assume you're either a child or that you don't know anything.
Okay. Yeah.
Which either one would work.
They were very authoritative. Yeah. It's like, we're going to tell you some shit.
It's like you're watching a government training film at certain times. Everything's the authorities are explaining shit to you, you dumbass.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's 50s style. That's the way it was.
That's the way it worked.
And it's kind of like an immersive experience of fucking listening to these dudes tell you, we're going to fight these ants. We're going to save the earth, you know? It's good. It's good. I'd say it was up there with War of the Worlds.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't think anyone's going to argue with you. I mean, anytime anybody is talking about 50s creature features, 50s sci-fi movies, this is always, like, in the top 10 somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to see why. Like I said, I kind of feel like a lot of the big bug movies that came in the wake of this, like Tarantula or The Deadly Mantis or something like that, which were okay.
Yeah,
they
were rip-offs of this.
But they were, like, rip-offs of this. The thing that makes this one work, I think, is not only did they build, you know, three big fucking ants that are, so it's not just like a tarantula crawling across a postcard or whatever the fuck, like they did like with process shots, like they did some of the other ones. Yeah, they actually built, I think they built three whole ones.
Okay.
And then like parts of other ones, like for various shots.
Yeah.
Although it looks like they built a lot more than that, but that was like you said, clever editing. But I think what makes this one really good is one, the characters are all really distinct from one another. It's just not just a bunch of like generic hero white dudes who you can't really tell apart.
Yeah.
And the writing in this is really good.
Yeah.
Everything in this makes logical sense and follows from the thing that came before. The movie lays out clearly what its rules are. It follows its own rules.
Yeah.
And the way that it goes, like the first third of it is probably like, is set up like a mystery or like an investigation.
Because you never see the ants.
Because you don't see the ants until probably like a third of it. It's not a hugely long movie. It's only like an hour and a half. But yeah, you don't see them. You're just seeing it from the point of view of like people investigating like, what the fuck is going on? So it's like a mystery.
They don't know it's ants.
Yeah. And so then when after they discover it, and then when they get to the halfway point, I really like that the stakes keep increasing because they get to the halfway point, they find the nest, and they are like, okay, what are we going to do about this? And they figure it out, and then they think they destroy the nest, but no. Then, like, the stakes are raised again because they're like, okay, well, we destroyed all these ants, but two of the queens escaped.
With drones, and we
have to figure out where they went because they're going to establish, you know, more nests elsewhere, and they're going to wipe out the human race eventually if they keep doing that. So then, like, after that, they pivot to another mystery where they're trying to figure out, like, where the queens went to so they can destroy it before, you know, it kind of, like,
then there's
escalates.
Then there's a theme of OPSEC or operational security where they're trying to keep the shit quiet. They don't want to panic the population. And then eventually they're like, no, we have to tell people. So they had that thing going too. There's one part where a guy sees the drones flying in his airplane, in his Cessna, and he's an old World War II pilot. And he says they were UFOs that looked like ants. And they went and they kept his ass locked up because they didn't want him going around. They knew he was telling the truth, but they said, no, he's crazy. Keep him locked
up. Yeah, keep him in here so he doesn't like...
That was some more operational security stuff. So it's kind of like there's a theme of, hey, you know, the government does shit that's crooked to protect other people in the big picture. So I liked that aspect.
That was, do you know who that was playing that one? It was one scene, but he made a big impression. That was Fess Parker. He actually went on later to be Davy Crockett in the original Davy Crockett show, like the Disney one. And he was Daniel Boone also.
Okay.
And matter of fact, it was this movie, like Disney executives like saw him in this movie and were like, ooh, that guy should play Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
So he made a big impression. He was actually great in this. There is like humor in this.
Yeah.
But, you know, the drunks in particular.
Yeah,
we'll talk about the drunks.
A lot of drunks. A lot of drunk humor. It's good
like,
though. It's funny.
I like the drunks. Yeah, they made me laugh out loud a few times.
Yeah.
So I like that. But I like that the movie isn't, because some of the like cheesier 50s big bug movies or big monster movies, I kind of feel like they were almost, I don't want to say that they were like self-aware or they were like winking at the audience, but
yeah,
I kind of feel like, I kind of feel like it was a little bit more in that direction. This one takes itself pretty seriously. It's not like all the actors are good. They're not like making a joke out of it. It's like, oh, giant ants. You know what I mean? It's like, everybody's like, oh, fuck. Because, you know, in real life, if ants grew to this size, we would be hosed.
Yeah.
Big time. And they kind of go into that in this movie.
What I liked about it is that this is definitely post-World War II. Most of the guys in this movie are cops or soldiers or scientists, and they've all been through the war. They talk about it. Even the dude who saw the flying UFO ants was from the war. So, because it's a post-war movie, it's trying to make... It's taking itself seriously, and it's trying to increase the badass level. Everything in it... They can't be fake, okay? Everything in it looks authentic. Those authentic uniforms, authentic equipment, the way they're wearing their gear's good and it's correct for the time. They're homage in the military. It's very much kind of a movie that veterans would go see. I could tell. I would have loved this if I was a World War II vet. And what this translates to is believability within the limitations of the special effects of the time. The action scenes with the guns are the best I've seen in the 50s. Remember him when he was down there surrounded by all those ants and machine gunning them and stuff? Just the way it was shot, the cinematography, the editing and everything, it was very high action. And then the fucking his buddies eventually bust through the wall and pull him out of there and save him. You didn't normally see good fight choreography in 50s shit. It's usually like lame, real lame.
Yeah.
But this was like something out of Aliens, you know, with the Colonial Marines fighting the aliens down inside the reactor and everything. You can tell that is homaging this.
Yeah, because some of the scenes, particularly when they have to go down, because like I said, when they find the first nest, which is supposed to be like in the New Mexico desert, it's actually, they shot it in California, but you know, it's supposed to be New Mexico. And they find the first nest and they're like, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to use the bazookas and we're going to lay down like a layer of this like phosphorus and that'll keep them down because they don't like the heat and it'll keep them down in there. And then we can like get real close and throw a bunch of cyanide gas in there and gas them all out.
Yeah.
And like I said, this does work to an extent, but they're like, yeah, but now we have to go down in there and make sure they're all dead, because the doctor is like, yeah, if some of the queens escaped, then we're fucked, and like they'll build other nests elsewhere, so we have to go down there and make sure everyone's dead.
Yeah,
so
and it was a woman.
Yeah.
And it was a woman. She insisted go down there, and the guys are trying to protect her, you know, because this is, they're being what you called back in the day hard-boiled. You know, they're kind of hardcore. These are tough guys, you know what I mean? Military veterans from World War II, and they're like, no, it's too dangerous for a woman. She gets down there and kicks ass, though.
She's like, bitch, I'm a scientist.
Bitch, I'm a scientist. I'll do that.
She's like, you guys don't know what to look for. Like, I know what to look for, so I'm going.
So,
like, plus, I just met you yesterday. Don't tell me what to do.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of, there's some of that shit going on. They're like, well, I guess these women can also do hardcore stuff. So it's pretty good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah, there is a little bit of the, like, ooh, lady scientist.
Ooh la la.
I'm going to get sick
so
I can
blah, blah, blah.
There is a little bit of that, but it's not. I've seen, like, a lot worse
in 50s
movies.
Yeah, it's not.
And she is, like, a very serious character. She knows her shit. It's her and... Well,
and she's good looking, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, she's actually... She started as an opera singer, actually. You know, that actress. Joan Weldon, her name is. Good. And so when they came there... Like, because they come there because, I guess, like, the FBI were kind of like, we can't figure out, like, what this... Because before they even see the ants, they don't know it's ants. But, like, they find these, like, footprints, and they're like, what the fuck are these?
Yeah.
And so they send them to, like, the FBI, like, field lab, but they're like, we don't know what the fuck this is. So they kick it to, like, a zoologist or something like that. And so the FBI actually ends up sending this the two doctors, who's like it's like this doddering old dude who's also like a genius, and his daughter, and they're both like they work together.
They're kind of like entomologist types.
Yeah, you know what I really liked? I really liked that the dad. He didn't, I don't think he ever called his daughter by her name, which I think was Patricia. He always called her Doctor. And I was that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He had, like, a lot of respect, and they were always, like, talking to each other, like, well, what are we going to do about this kind of shit?
It was all in a professional
I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
I liked that very much. But, yeah, so the guy that played the older doctor was actually Edmund Gwenn, who is the same guy that played Kris Kringle in Miracle on 34th Street. So there you go. I was pretty sure I had seen that little girl that was in this because I love the first act of this.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, everybody knows this came out like a long time ago. And so everybody now knows that obviously it's giant ants. But the way that they kind of, and you probably back then you would have known it was giant ants because the shit's on the poster.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I like that the first third of it, they lay it out as though, you know, the cops or whatever are like, they have no idea what the fuck this is. So they laying out like a mystery. Like, and the first thing is they're going around in the plane or something like that. And they see a little girl with a broken doll walking through the desert
by herself.
Like, and she looks like all fucked up. Like she's in shock. She's just like, well, I don't know what the fuck happened. Yeah, she's like walking through it, and they're like trying to like, hey, little girl, like, who are you? And she won't answer them. And she's like in shock.
She's
and
mute.
Stuff.
She won't say it. So, and you said that was Newt. That's where they got. That's where they got the idea for Newt.
She's very Newt. She's proto Newt.
Yeah. And then like the two cops, and then you go through the two police investigations. One of those guys gets killed. The other one, he ends up being basically the hero of the story. He eventually ends up giving his life to save the kids, didn't he?
Because they, like I said, they destroy the first nest.
Yeah.
But when they get down there, they discover that the queens have escaped. So then they have to like spend like the second and third act of the movie like finding out where the queens went to. And it turns out that the queen had established another nest underneath, like, in the storm drains, like, underneath Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so they have to go down in there and, you know, destroy everything. And there's two little kids. To make it, like, extra tense, there were two little kids and their dad, and they were down in the storm drains, like, flying model airplanes or something like that. And the ants attacked them and killed the dad, but they don't know if the kids are dead or if they're still in there. So they have to kind of go in there and...
One thing that got me with the movie is that the cops, you know, they were ex-military. Then they hook up with the general. And then a little later on, they're all back in their military uniforms. So I don't know if he reactivated them or what. They were back in their army uniforms, and the general had given them bazookas. And they were part of the damn mission to blow up the damn first nest out in the... They never really explained that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like, that. I mean... You know, whatever.
Cops are not in the army.
I know, but I mean, if they were veterans, maybe they could have said, somebody had the authority to like
put them back on duty
because of the situation. Because
it's an emergency situation or something.
I was kind of thinking.
They just put surplus equipment on or just got issued an emergency issue.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like, look, we got a big problem, but we need all the dudes we can.
You're fucking reactivated.
Yeah. Right. Like, I kind of figure that's
maybe they were National Guard, too.
Yeah, so so there are like lots of avenues where they could have like done that.
Right.
So yeah, so I want to kind of go into a little bit. Like I said, there's a fuck ton of people. I brought up like James Whitmore, who plays Ben, who's kind of like the hero of the movie. He's one of the first cops that investigates, and his partner gets killed like early on. Like they find like the trailer that's all busted out and like sugar, and then they find like the grocer dead and all this other kind of stuff. That guy was in a fuck ton of stuff, and I knew I'd like he was in Oklahoma. He was in Tora, Tora, Tora. Actually, probably younger people will recognize him from The Shawshank Redemption. He played like the old guy Brooks in that movie. That was one of his last roles. And also James Arness is in this, who was in a fuck ton of movies, including the original Thing from Another World from 1951, but probably best known as Marshall Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke, who he was on there for 20 years. Actually, also Peter Graves's older brother, in case you didn't know that. So the original story for this movie, it was by a guy named George Worthing Yates. And I knew that name. I was like, he must have written a fuck ton of stuff that was on MST. He did. Earth vs. the Flying Saucers, Amazing Colossal Man, the one about the big giant dude, Earth versus Spider, War of the Colossal Beast, King Kong versus Godzilla, Tormented, a whole bunch of other ones. Now, apparently, I think it was him, but he got the idea. I guess he was so horrified by the atomic bomb like that was dropped on Hiroshima, that he wanted to make something to sort of like a movie about this is what happens when we fuck around with this kind of shit. You know what I mean? Like, we get giant ants and we're gonna wipe out the human race. Like I said, this wasn't the first like anti-nuclear kind of like, or you know, what have we wrought type of thing. That was, you know, there had been a couple prior to that, but this was the first one that was bugs. He also, and I was watching another video about this earlier, I guess around the time that he was writing this, there was this line of like flower seeds. I don't know if they were like carnations or marigolds or something like that. And they made the big advertising selling point was like, we bombarded this with X-rays.
Yeah.
And so they would grow the flowers, and the flowers were like really big. They were like a foot across or some shit. So he had seen that because they were really popular. And he's just like, holy crap, like what would happen if they could make the flowers that big? Then what would it do to like other animals? You know what I mean? So that's how he got the idea. So he writes the screenplay, it goes through a couple iterations. And originally, this is really weird, but Warner Brothers were gonna make it. But then like the executives were like, well, we kind of think like giant ants, that's kind of stupid. They didn't really get sci-fi, even though Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, like the year before, had been like wildly successful, like with the Ray Harryhausen creature and stuff. But they were just kind of like, I don't know if we want to do it. I don't know if we want to do this. So they were so reluctant that they offered to sell the script to, I think it was 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox were like, yeah, we'll take it. We'll give you $500,000.
Yeah.
At which point Warner Brothers is like, never mind, we'll keep it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they didn't realize like how valuable the property was that they had, I guess. So they decided to make it. Now, originally it was going to be in color and in 3D.
That'd have been great, probably.
So you can see, like, the some of the scenes, like, toward the end, like, with the flamethrowers being shot right at the camera.
Yeah, it'd have been good.
And there's, like, a couple of others where you can tell that it was kind of shot for 3D originally. But then, I guess, like, the technology didn't work out or they didn't really like it. And then, like, again, they, even though, you know, 20th Century Fox had wanted it, Warner Brothers still seemed like they weren't real sure about the concept. And so like literally I think 2 days before they started shooting it, they're like, never mind, we're not doing it in color, do it in black and white. And they also didn't do it widescreen. Did you notice that? It's in, yeah, like it's in I think it's in 4:3 like aspect
maybe
ratio.
Maybe the ants didn't look as good in color. Maybe they looked real fake.
Actually, because from everything I've heard, they actually looked better in color. Because they said when they painted them, like I said, they made 3 full-grown ones. They painted them like this purpley green, and it's, they said it looked like, you know, like an ant's, you know, exoskeleton. Yeah. Like it was kind of shiny.
Okay.
And they said it looked really good in color, like when they did the test prints and stuff like that. But I think Warner Brothers just wanted to cheap out. Black and white was cheaper.
Yeah.
And you know,
I was watching it going, but I'd like to see a colorized version. Remember?
You did say that.
I said,
yeah,
I'd like to see a colorized version. I didn't know. You could probably restore it.
Yeah, I wonder if, remember when Ted Turner was colorizing everything back in the day? I wonder if he ever colorized this one. I don't really know. But yeah, it was originally supposed to be in color, but then they decided they were going to cheap out and just do it in black and white. But honestly, I mean, it's still good in black and white, and I think some of the scenes, like where, like I said, where they're creeping around down in the storm drains, or where they're down in the nest and stuff like that, are like actually really creepy. And maybe would have suffered from being in color. I'm not really entirely sure. But they do have, it's interesting because the title, like when it comes up, them, you know what I mean? The title is in color. Yeah. But they did that, like, just specifically, like, they were like, hey, it was going to be in color, but now this is all that's left of, like, just the title being in color.
At the time I was watching it, the only thing that I was like, man, I wish they would have done this, and that is when the pilot is saying that he saw UFOs that look like ants.
Yeah.
There should have been a little scene where you
see a flashback
of what, that way he's not just telling the story, you actually see what he's seeing, because they could have easily done that. I just don't know why they didn't.
I mean, well, I kind of feel like because the budget was cut, maybe, and I don't know if this is true, I'm just speculating, but maybe they were going to have a flashback, but they're like, well, we can't really afford to have like 3, because he saw 3 of them, right? Yeah. Or 4 of them.
Three. I think you said 3.
Like, one, it was a queen down, and 2 of the drones. Yeah. So, like, flying through the air. So maybe that would have been, or maybe they didn't, it didn't look that good, or something right, like that. Another thing that I noticed, too, that was probably budgetary, was that if you notice, like, 2 of the queens escaped, right? Mm. One of the queens went and made a nest on that, like, it was an aircraft carrier, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't show that. They just had them, like, talking about it.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we had to sink that shit because, you know, because the nest was on there. And so, but they didn't show it. And I said, well, that's probably because it would have been too expensive to show. Because mostly they just go after the other queen that ends up, like, underneath. Yeah. So that was something that I thought of when I was watching it. I was like, oh, they just showed them in a boardroom saying, well, we found one of them, and it was on an aircraft carrier, and we sunk the shit. So that one's taken care of. But then,
they end up in the L.A. flood control system where I used to play as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was having flashbacks. I was going, yeah, I remember. I think I kind of knew where that was. I think that was over there near where the old barn was. I think it was in Alameda, or near Alameda. Anyway, it's hard to tell. A lot of that shit looks the same.
On Wikipedia, it says between the 1st and 7th Street bridges, east of downtown Los Angeles.
All right, so no, that was okay. It's closer.
That's where they shot
it. I was watching that. We used to try to go in there, and we'd make damn torches. I was about 10, you know. 8, 9, 10. We'd make torches and try to go into those things. As soon as it started to get dark, we'd get too chicken and back. We never took flashlights. Always tried to make a torch because we thought we were cavemen.
Yeah.
And we were afraid of those ants. We thought those ants might be down in there. We'd seen this movie.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
I think originally they were going to shoot the climax like on the Santa Monica Pier, but I guess it was like too expensive.
Now during that sequence where the army's going through the storm drains. You can tell that it's authentic.
Yeah, they really went down in there.
And vehicles, and that they're really in there. And that those dudes look like Army Rangers to me. They weren't actors. They were, those dudes were, that was top-notch infantry dudes for the 50s. You know, they were, fucking buffed out for the 50s. A lot of guys were fucking weedy in the 50s. They were pretty big dudes. And, good equipment. The way they're wearing their kit is good. The correct boots. They had M1 Garands with rifle grenades on the end. They were shooting those at the ants. Guys with M1 Thompsons, M1A1, or the Thompsons A1s from World War II. Real flamethrowers.
Yeah, lots of flamethrowers.
Yeah.
Lots of fire.
30 carbines.
Shooting fire at the big ants. It's awesome.
30 carbines, and it really the best fight choreography of the 50s. That final scene, close range.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. Yeah, because they're in the close, and then, like, there's, like, cave-ins, and, like, all the ants are coming at them, and they're, like, shooting fire everywhere.
And he gets separated from everybody else, and he's trying to save himself from all these ants, and he's machine-gunning them up close, and then he just barely made it, and then they finally bust through the wall and come in, bah, and shoot them all up, and they all get out of there. It was just good choreography. The edit was right. It was just like something out of damn Aliens.
I like, too, at the end that, because I kind of feel like a lot of 50s movies came in the wake of this. And I'm thinking here, what was the one about the crickets, beginning of the end? Where it's just like, well, we have to, capture one of these things for science or anything like that. Like, at the end of this, everybody was just like, nope, burn them up.
Yeah.
No, thank you. We're not having any more of that. Yeah. So they just, like, burn them all up at the end. Also, a couple fun facts. Did you notice that Leonard Nimoy has a very, very small, like, walk-on role?
No, I didn't
notice
that. In this
very, very young... I think he had a couple of lines, but he was... do you know the scene where they were saying, okay, well, we're trying to... We don't want to tell the public what's going on because they'll freak out, but we... So any time that you hear any, like, kind of weird... Because they're trying to figure out, like, where the queen went to. So they're like, well, anytime you hear any, like, UFO sightings or anything like that, like, send it to our office so we can, like, track where the shit is. And there's a scene where there's a call that comes in about the UFO thing, and Leonard Nimoy is the officer that takes it and then hands the thing over to the girl that's, like, at the desk.
Didn't notice it.
And he says something to her about it, like, oh, this is crazy shit. And she's like, what are they doing up there? Or something like that, because they don't know. So, yeah, that's Leonard Nimoy. I don't know if this was his first screen appearance, but, yeah.
Man, now that I know that this was the cheap version, that there was going to be an expensive version that was color, I wish they would have made that one.
Yeah.
I wish they would have made that one.
You know, the special effects for this got nominated for an Oscar that year.
I see.
It didn't win. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea did, but it did...
And then when you said that those ants looked even better in color.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I haven't seen them. But that's what everybody that was there said they looked a lot better because they were, like, this purpley-green, like, shiny.
Yeah, in the black and white version, they look okay.
Yeah.
They look okay. You know, it was a lot better than the 50s, than your average shit of the 50s. You know, it just symbolizes an ant. But they don't look real to me.
No, they don't.
Cool. They look cool, though. But I bet you they would have looked a lot better in color.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can tell they're mechanical and, like, that somebody's back there. But like I said, it's always... it's going to look a lot better than... Said again, I'm going to bring up beginning of the end, where the crickets are attacking Chicago at the end, and it's very, very clearly a postcard with regular-sized crickets, crawling up there, going off into the sky. Shit like that. You know
that
what I mean?
Stupid.
So it looks like a lot better than that. And even, like, movies like Tarantula and Earth vs. the Spider, they used, like, real spiders, but it was, like, a process shot. So you'd, like, blow it up and, like, put the... You know, you'd lay the spider, like, over the
even
landscape.
Though it still doesn't matter. The ant is fake, but the dude is in frame with it, and he's interacting with it. It's an object that's really there. That's always more exciting.
I liked that better. And I liked that the ants, like, they had, like, the big mandibles.
Yeah,
and they would
you.
Grab, like, some dudes, and I'd be like, man, how fucking fucked would you be if that happened? And, well, the one guy, like, the grocer that gets killed, Gramps, like, near the beginning, before they know that it's ants... You know, the guy doing the autopsy is like, bitch, we don't know what happened to this guy, because it's like his fucking spine's broken and his head's broken and his neck's broken. And like, he's broken.
They find a piece of an ant, like of chitin, I guess. It got shot off by a .38 revolver that was laying there on the ground. They never could find. I think Gramps might have done that. They took it, but they never did say what it was, did they?
What are you talking about when they were going through the
trailer and either at
that
the
wasn't a piece of an ant. That was that was the broken off piece of the little girl doll head.
Oh, is that what it was?
That's how they knew that the little girl had come from that trailer. Because they're like, that was the piece of the doll's head that was broken off. Because they had the scene at the end where she was sleeping in the car and he brought it back and, like, put it on the girl's. Yeah. Because they didn't know. They found the girl wandering in the desert. And she wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
And so then they were like, okay, well, we found a trailer up here that's all fucked up that looks like somebody went in there and, like, busted out the side and everybody's gone. And that's how they knew that she had come from that trailer because they found, and I think they found, like, a little piece of fabric from her robe and stuff, too. Yeah. And so there's that.
Not a perfect movie, but an enjoyable movie. And for the 50s, great. Great. It's up there with, like, War of the Worlds, Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you're into 50s movies, 50s sci-fi, this is one of the ones. This is, like, one of the quintessential, like, 50s sci-fi movies you have to see. First Big Bug movie. And honestly, I would say probably the best one. Yeah. You know, because...
Oh, Big Bug movie is the best one.
Yeah, and I think, like, a lot of that is because of the characters, because of the storytelling. I just really liked all the characters in this. I liked... Like I said, I feel like later ones, you just kind of have this panoply of, like... white dudes with square jaws and, like, big suits, and they all kind of, like, were indistinguishable from one another, whereas in this one, it seemed like they all had their own distinct personalities, they all had their distinct character. I particularly really liked, like, the old doctor guy. Like, he was great, because he was, like, so doddering, but he was clearly a genius. But, like, he wasn't doddering, he was just kind of, like, so in his own head that he didn't really have time for all of this nonsense. Like, the funny scene where they're in the helicopter and they're telling him, well, you have to say when you're done talking, like, over the thing, you have to say over. He's like, why? They know I'm done talking. And he's like, why do I have to do this? This is ridiculous. We don't have, like, time to waste on this bullshit. Yeah. And I was like, I agree with you, man. I agree. Yeah. So he, like, gets all cranky.
He wasn't into the radio.
he was also look, they know that it's me, okay?
We also found out that back in the 50s when L.A. was a fucking civilization... They had fucking hospitals for drunk people.
The drunk ward.
The drunk ward.
I was like, who knew?
And it's just beds with drunk dudes in there.
They said that one dude had been...
Yeah.
The one dude that's like, make me a sergeant, bring me the booze. That guy that was singing.
Yeah.
They said that guy had been there for 5 months. And I was like, holy cow. He didn't even know that he was in there. Well, he was the guy that knew...
The drunk ward.
Like, he was... Yeah, he wasn't just, like, a random dude. They were talking to him because he said he'd seen the ants going down into the thing. But he was so drunk that nobody listened to him because everyone just thought he was a loon. But I just thought, there are, like, lots of funny drunks in this.
Yeah.
I just think that's, and I was just like the whole time, and it's like, let's go to like the drunk ward. I'm like, the hospital's a drunk ward?
Yeah.
And then Holy shit.
The hero says.
It is the 50s.
Heroes, they're saying, make sure that those ants are all get saturated. There's something that's set up, some kind of poison. And he goes, I'm going to get saturated after this. It's just fucking funny.
And I said, man, I'm going to bring that here. Nomenclature back. I'm going to bring that terminology. Yeah, I'm going to say that on the show today. I'm going to get saturated.
Yeah.
That's so great. It's just so evocative. I love it.
Yeah.
This movie, too, also, another fun fact for you film buffs out there, has two uses of the infamous Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe three. I heard it twice, but this, you have to think that it wasn't like a cliche back then, because I think it had only started being used like in the early 50s, like maybe 51, 52.
It's a stock scream.
It's a stock scream, yeah. And it's very, I'll put it in the video, like right here. Right there.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it's, I mean, everybody knows what it is now. It's like a very, very classic noise. But it's just funny to hear it because now, you know, everybody knows what the Wilhelm scream sounds like. But it was funny for me to like watch the movie, and I was like, hey, Wilhelm scream. And then I was like, later on, I was like, oh, another one. Like, one of the guys, like, what got grabbed by the mandibles, like, he did the Wilhelm scream, and I just thought that was really funny. So I thought that would point that out. I think somebody else that showed up, I was gonna say, when Leonard Nimoy, you know, is in this, Dick York is supposedly in this too, but I didn't see him. Like, I don't think he had any speaking lines or anything like that, but he's,
I forgot who Dick York was.
He's from I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
He was supposedly in this too, like, but I guess it was like a blink and you'll miss it type of walk-on type of thing. But Leonard Nimoy had at least one line, I remember, like, talking to that girl at the desk. But he's like super young in this, and he's in a uniform and everything like that. But yeah, like I said, if you're into like creature features at all, if you're into sci-fi at all, definitely see this one, if only because of how influential it was. Like you said, Aliens directly homages several scenes from this movie.
So does Alien.
Yeah.
He's one of them from Alien.
Yeah.
Dallas going through the tunnels with the light.
Yeah, because that happens at the end of this.
Right,
like
it.
I said, the whole thing about the little girl with the doll and them finding her not being able to talk because something traumatic happened and all that stuff. You know, that's directly from this movie.
Woman going down there looking for the egg cases and where the queen lived. That's in it. She's got two dudes with her. But that's all there. And she goes back, bad news, a queen hatched. It's not here.
Yeah, we're like, shit, now we're fucked.
Right.
How funny would it have been, like, in the 50s movie if that lady doctor had just said, let go of her, you bitch! In the 1950s.
Yeah.
That would have been hilarious. But that doesn't happen. But maybe somebody could do a fan edit.
I'm still going to go back and say, in the final, at the end of the movie, in the final action scene, some of the best action sequences I've seen in a 50s movie.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely stands the test of time. I mean,
now I find out that there was a color version, and this is a cheap version. They were gonna make it even more expensive. Man, I wish they would have made that one.
I wonder how much, because this movie was like a big hit. Like I said, it was kind of one of their, it was easily one of Warner Brothers' like biggest earners that year. And I kind of wonder, would it have done even better?
Probably.
Like if it had been color and 3D, like they originally intended,
3D with the extra action scenes that weren't included. Yeah, no, it would have been great.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
But it's still great the way it is, I mean, honestly. But I would like to kind of see that version.
Right.
But yeah, so...
I would like to see the full boat version.
Yeah.
It would have been better.
I wonder, they've never remade this, have they?
No, you could remake this.
If
I were to ever remake this, it would be a period piece. It'd be happening in the 50s. It only makes sense if it's happening in the 50s.
Yeah, I think they definitely should make it like set in the 50s. Like, so it would have the same
logic.
Like post-war.
Yeah.
Because the ants, in case we didn't mention it, were caused by radiation from Alamogordo and the, from the atomic bomb test.
Them was also homaged in the Fallout video game series.
Yeah, Fallout 3. Don't they have big ants in there that are called those?
Those or something.
They're called
there's
something
a mission,
like that.
There's a side mission you can get involved in, and you have to fucking destroy the ants. And it's right out of the right. It's them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hilarious. But seriously, it's really good. Watch it. Whether you're into 50 shit or not, it's just like really entertaining. Easily one of the best movies from the 1950s. It's on Amazon Prime. I think it was $3.99 to rent it. Check it out. Or if you've seen it or if you haven't seen it in a long time, let us know in the comments what you think about it. And that'll do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys on the next one. Bye.